Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel today is, to my right, Justice Bill Meyer, to my left, Justice Lee Gabriel. I'm Leanne Dofino, and I want to tell you how much we appreciate your arranging for the sunshine for this afternoon. It will make it more pleasant for everybody, especially your trip back when you leave court. All right, I understand that everybody is ready. We have only one case set for oral submission. Our other cases are all being submitted on briefs, so we'll go ahead and get started, even though it's about 30 seconds until time to begin. Call the case.
The court calls Louisville Independent School District versus C.H. Calhoun. May it please the court, Mr. George Scherer will argue for the appellant, and Ms. Amy Myers will argue for the appellate.
Okay. George, you ready?
May it please the court. George Scherer and Daniel Bomer appearing for the appellant Louisville Independent School District. In 2006, C.H. Townhomes made payments to the school district on its delinquent property taxes. C.H. Townhomes contends that it paid too much and it has sued the school district in an attempt to recover this alleged overpayment. It asserts that Tax Code Section 3111 gives it the right to file this lawsuit. The issue before this court is whether or not the school district has immunity from this suit and whether or not the trial court erred in not granting its plea to the jurisdiction and motion to dismiss.
How do you challenge the decision not to pay back what they consider an overcharge? Is there any limit on the discretion to whether to pay back or not?
Well, we believe the better course of action, rather than pay the taxes and then file suit later to try to get a refund, we believe the better action is to take care of that before you pay the taxes. We're not saying that you cannot file a lawsuit against the taxing jurisdictions at all. What you can't do is file the lawsuit and try to get money back. We think the better course of action would have been to done one of two things. C.H. Townhomes could have filed a declaratory judgment action, could have tendered that money into the registry and asked the trial court to determine whether or not it had paid the correct amount. Had it done that, then if the court ruled that it was correct, the money that wasn't in dispute could have been dispersed to the taxing jurisdiction, and the remainder could have been dispersed back to C.H. Townhomes. That's one alternative.
The court would have had jurisdiction to hear a death action?
Yes, Your Honor. There is no, you can file a declaratory judgment action to declare your rights under a statute. Now, if you came down the side and said, well, it's not fair that they have to pay anything, or they shouldn't have to pay what's in dispute, by the same token, they could have paid what was not in dispute to the taxing jurisdictions, filed that same declaratory judgment action, and again have the court declare their rights under the statute that they had paid the correct amount. Once again, you're not bringing the concept of governmental immunity into play by doing that. So we believe the proper way to have done it was to address this beforehand rather than pay the taxes and then try to get that back at a later time.
Of course, their position is they're not asking for money damages. They're asking for a refund of their own money.
That is true. But we have cited a couple of cases in our brief that talk about that. The principle is when you have given money either under a statute or an ordinance or the like, you have paid money into the taxing jurisdiction, that money is now in the possession. You're asking for that money or part of that money to be returned. That's the whole principle behind that. And we've cited a couple of cases that say when you have filed a suit against a governmental entity asking for a refund, that is a suit for money damages.
Where in 3111 is there any provision for filing a suit, period?
No, Your Honor, there is no right to judicial review in the statute or nothing that even suggests that you can file a lawsuit. What it says, our position is this statute is clear. It's straightforward. What does it say? If a taxpayer believes it is paid too much, then it has the right to apply to the tax assessor collector and have the tax assessor collector take a look at that. In fact, we would suggest to you that it's a tri-level of review. The assessor collector can look at it, the auditor for the taxing jurisdiction can look at it, and the governing body. In fact, if it's over a certain dollar amount, I believe it's $2,500, that has to be approved by the governing body of the taxing jurisdiction. So at any level, there are multiple people or entities that can take a look at this to see whether or not the claim has merit. Now, as I've discussed, we have cited cases in our brief that talk about suits for refunds are suits for money damages. However, the school district is a political subdivision of the state, and it cannot be sued for money damages unless the legislature has given its approval. The Texas Supreme Court has said that it will not find waiver of governmental immunity unless the legislature, either in a statute or in a resolution, has indicated in clear and unambiguous language. This entire case is framed by what you find or don't find in Section 3111. When you examine the pleadings of C.H. Townhomes, it does not identify what language in 3111 gives it the right to file this lawsuit. In fact, it doesn't cite to any statute that gives it the right to file this lawsuit. They would urge this court to strictly construe the statute to find waiver, but we do not believe that's the correct standard. If the statute were unclear or the legislature's intent, you could not see from the statute, maybe that would be the standard. But we believe the statute is clear and it is straightforward. The Supreme Court has said that when statutes are clear and the language is straightforward, a reviewing court simply needs to apply that statute according to the plain language. It would be improper to engage in some sort of statutory analysis or statutory construction. Further, on the narrow issue of waiver, if it's not clear what the legislature had in mind, the courts have said, you need to resolve the issue in favor of retaining immunity. In our brief, we have cited several examples of statutes where the legislature has very clearly decided to waive either immunity from suit or immunity from liability, or perhaps even both. We think a really good example of this can be found at Tax Code Section 3407. 3407 applies in a situation where a court has found that a tax foreclosure sale is void for some reason. In that situation, the purchaser at sale has two potential options. The purchaser can either be subrogated to the liens of the taxing jurisdictions, or in the alternative, it is authorized under 3407 to file a lawsuit against the taxing jurisdictions, and the court in that situation can order the taxing jurisdictions to return the money. We think there's a very clear difference in what the legislature has decided in these areas when you compare the rights and remedies under 3407 versus what you find in 3111. In 3407, it clearly waived immunity from suit and from liability, but it didn't do so in 3111. We don't think that's by accident. We think that is consistent with what the legislature has done over the years in the area of tax collections and governmental immunity. You need to look, we argue, no further than the Texas Tort Claims Act to see that. The Texas Tort Claims Act, as we know, is a limited waiver of governmental immunity in certain situations. There's a section in the Tort Claims Act, however, that specifically addresses tax collections. That's section 101.055. This section says that if you have a claim that relates to the assessment or the collection of taxes, then the Tort Claims Act doesn't apply. In other words, governmental immunity, even after the passage of the Tort Claims Act, it has been preserved by the legislature. We've already discussed what remedies we think C.H. Townhomes should have pursued in this case, but there's one point I'd also like to emphasize. The appellee here had the choice either before the taxes were paid or even after the taxes were paid, they could have brought this matter before the school district. The school district has policies in place to where if there's some matter in it, apparently I find no exclusion for tax claims, you can file formal grievances with the school district on basically any matter. You could have them decide that. Not only that, they always had the option of asking the school board to consider this matter at one of their meetings.
That really sounds like asking us to review our own opinions, appealing our opinions to us. How comfortable would that make you?
Well, no, I realize the predicament that would put them in, but I think what we're talking about is due process. You cannot deprive someone of a property right without giving them the opportunity to air that grievance. But that's what the statute says. It does. In fact, you could go through, you could ask the auditor to take a look at something. You could ask the tax assessor collector. They could agree on it, but when you read 3111, if it's over a certain amount, it still has to be reviewed by the governing body. I would submit that this is sort of a quasi-type administrative review, and I believe there's case law out there that says if an administrative agency makes a ruling on something, you don't have the automatic right to file a lawsuit on that unless a statute gives you the right to file a lawsuit on that. So I think that would be the analogy. We just believe that pursuing the path that they did, they limited the legal options that they had down the line. Next, briefly, I would like to just discuss the authorities that have been cited to this court on this issue. C.H. Townhomes has cited no cases that discusses governmental immunity, how it can be waived, and what the Texas Supreme Court is looking at to find waiver. They've cited the Cockrell case as support that 3111 waives governmental immunity. But as we pointed out in our brief, the taxing jurisdictions in Cockrell did not raise the issue of governmental immunity, and the court in Cockrell did not rule on the issue of governmental immunity. So we would submit to this court that provides no guidance on this issue. On the other hand, we've cited cases in our brief, specifically the Gallardo, the Skoda, and the Waller cases that talk about the interaction between tax collections and governmental immunity. And I think a fair reading of each one of those cases is, even after the passage of the Tort Claims Act, governmental immunity in the area of tax collections has been preserved. In fact, the Waller case went a little bit further than that. There's some language in that statute that says in the area of tax collections, it considered this immunity to be absolute. The final case I would like to emphasize would be the City of Houston versus Williams case that we cited in our brief. The court in Williams said that when you have sued a governmental entity and it concerns a past act or injury and the only award you can make is money damages, then that suit is barred by governmental immunity. I believe that's exactly what we have here, a past act, and the only award that they claim is going to make them whole is an award of money damages. So we believe the rationale in the Williams case is good authority for this court to consider. We believe that the legislature has not identified any widespread problem in this state when it comes to issuing refunds. 3111 and predecessor statutes go back a long way. In fact, it's pretty much existed in the same form as it is right now, going back to as far as 1925. The legislature has had many opportunities since then to visit this issue, and if they'd wanted to, they could have provided a right to file a lawsuit. They've chosen not to do so. We believe that the overwhelming weight of authority shows that the school district is immune from suit here, and that CH Townhomes has not met its burden showing that governmental immunity has been waived. That will conclude my presentation. I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, unless you have questions. Thank you.
What's the authority that allows the lawsuit in the first place?
If you look at the plain language, Your Honor, of Section 31.11 of the Tax Code, it provides an administrative remedy whereby a taxpayer can file an application for a refund for erroneous or overpayment. It is a statute which seeks to rectify a past action. Taxpayer received a tax bill and paid it in full, paid it on time, forgot they paid it again, realized they had paid twice, goes to the taxing authority and says, I overpaid. I need to try and see about getting some of my money back. They apply for that money. That's what this statute is meant to address. The problem and the issue we have here today is appellant is saying, yes, there is a process by which you can seek a refund or the overpayment or an erroneous payment. But if for some reason we decide maybe you did make an erroneous payment or an overpayment, but we don't want to give the money back, the taxpayer has no ability to force them to turn over the payment.
Where in 3111 does it provide for judicial review of the taxing authority declining the application for a refund?
If I understand your question, Your Honor, there are no magic words for a judicial review of that administrative process. If you look at statutory construction with respect to tax statutes, Your Honor, it is an established principle that they are to be construed in favor of the taxpayer. In the instant case, what we have is a statute that, you're right, does not contain the magic words or anything close to the magic words. But to read the statute to say that the taxpayer has no right to judicial review of the administrative process would hold the statute meaningless. And that is contrary to due process and contrary to statutory construction. The legislature created an administrative right, and that statute has mandatory language within it. The taxing authority shall refund the money if there is an erroneous or overpayment. To hold that there is no judicial review of that process would render it meaningless. And that's why we're here today. We don't think that statute is meaningless, but we do think that there should be the right for judicial review, because to hold otherwise, it would defeat due process. We are really here to submit one central issue to this honorable court. It's whether the taxpayer is barred from judicial review of a claim arising from Section 3111 of the tax code. To hold that a taxpayer has a statutorily created administrative right on the one hand to seek a refund, but not a judicial right on the other to seek judicial review is really violates the taxpayer's due process rights, which is one of the reasons the tax code is present and the reason why we're here today.
But isn't the real issue whether the taxing authority has governmental immunity? I mean, that's what they're claiming, and therefore there's no subject matter jurisdiction. And on page 7 of your brief, when you cite the Cockrell case, you say there that the Eastland Court of Appeals determined the taxing authority was not entitled to the affirmative defense of governmental or sovereign immunity. Yet Mr. Shearer says in that case that issue wasn't raised. So either he's mistaken or you included something there that's not quite correct. Which one is it?
Well, Your Honor, the case specifically says that jurisdiction over the suit for a refund, that the court maintains jurisdiction for suit over the refund. The court specifically states that. It cites to no authority for that, but it does state that the court has jurisdiction to hear a suit for a refund under Section 3111.
But they didn't specifically say that there's no affirmative, that if the taxing authority were to raise governmental or sovereign immunity, there's no affirmative defense that's applicable under these circumstances.
Your Honor, we feel that sovereign immunity for this particular statute is, in fact, waived with respect to judicial review. Reading the statute without the ability for judicial review would hold it meaningless. There is nothing that would prevent the taxing authority from taking money that doesn't belong to them and sitting back and saying, I'm sorry, but we're not going to give it back to you. That's really what appellant is asking this court to do, is to hold that a taxpayer has no right to seek any redress past applying for a refund.
Ms. Blackfoot, the language of the statute itself in 3111 talks about a process for an application to be filed and then addresses the manner in which the application is to be treated by the people who are covered in the statute, which includes the collector of the taxes and the particular taxing entity. And so in establishing a procedure, isn't that in fact a statutory structure that the legislature has set up to allow the application to be filed and then specifically recognizing the discretion of the people who are covered in the statute to make the payment of the refund or simply not make it? I mean, that's the import of the statute, isn't it?
Your Honor, you are correct. The statute does set forth an administrative remedy for a taxpayer to use or utilize in seeking a refund of erroneous or an overpayment of taxes. And it was designed to rectify a past act, something that has occurred prior to the review process in and of itself. The statute created a caveat to immunity with respect to that process, and we believe that caveat should be extended to hold the statute and to create some purpose for that statute other than to leave sole discretion within the taxing authority to decide whether or not the money should be returned, the property should be returned.
Well, I don't see wording anywhere that says if the tax collector or the auditor or the taxing unit fails to determine that a refund is to be made, that the taxpayer can go to court and require them to.
You're correct, Your Honor. It does not specifically state that. And we don't claim that it does specifically state that. We do state and we assert to this court that just because the magic words are not included within the statute does not mean that that is not the intent, nor does it mean that this court can't specifically find on rare occasions that sovereign immunity has been waived. Because to hold otherwise would mean that the statute is meaningless.
Well, and is it a meaningless statute if it sets out administrative procedure? I mean, could it have been the goal of the legislature? And couldn't this statute be interpreted because it sets out a procedure for an application and then a refund or repayment? Then that was the purpose. And if that's the purpose, then it does accomplish, if it's interpreted in that way with the plain language, written language in the statute, then it would not be a meaningless statute. It would simply be a statute without a remedy going to court after you've had an application made to these people and they've said no.
Correct, Your Honor. It could be that the legislature intended merely to provide a remedy to say, please, mate, will you please return my money? We believe that it actually goes further than that. And we believe if you would look at the City of Houston versus Hildebrandt case, 265 Southwest 3rd 22, the first Court of Appeals had this, held that in a similar situation, sovereign immunity did not bar the trial court from determining that a statutory provision that provided for administrative remedies, which did not contain the magic words, it did not bar suit. In the Hildebrand case, it was a firefighter who was on sick leave, and it was a case where the sick leave was being applied at a different rate than what the firefighter thought it should be applied at. And he went through the administrative process. It was a three-step process. At the end of that process, although the statute did not specifically say he had the right to a judicial appeal, he did file suit. And the court stated in its opinion, in determining whether a statute affords a clear and unambiguous waiver of immunity, absent express language to that effect, one interpreting guideline is that the statute must waive immunity beyond a doubt, such as when the provision in question would be meaningless unless immunity were waived. That's exactly what we have in this case. And we submit that to this court, that that's exactly what we have in this case.
Is it your position that all administrative decisions are ultimately subject to judicial review?
I will submit to the court that many administrative provisions do consider and contemplate judicial review. I would not submit to the court that all administrative procedures would necessarily result in the ability to have a judicial review. My interpretation and my submission to the court is merely with respect to Section 3111. I do think that this analysis holds true for other administrative procedures, statutorily created administrative procedures that do not include the magic words.
We don't have even one that's ambiguous. We don't have one at all. And how does that comport with that long line of cases?
Well, Your Honor, the Bullitt case, 549 Southwest 2nd 166, states that tax statutes are to be construed strictly against the taxing authority. And that in keeping and in line with the line of cases that say if interpretation of the statute, even though it doesn't include the magic words, would render the statute meaningless. If you find the statute has a meaning other than a merely, purely administrative procedure, or in the taxing authority at the end can go, sorry, you paid our money.
Well, really, that's not what they're saying. What they're saying is you chose the wrong vehicle. That's what they're saying, is that you filed a suit under specifically 3111, and you should have chosen a different vehicle to try to get there. Not that we're impugned and we can't, we never have to give you your money back. It's just that you've chosen the wrong way of trying to get there. Isn't that really what they're saying?
Your Honor, I believe that's what they've said here today. I believe that the real argument, though, is with respect to 3111. We weren't seeking, as their briefs indicated, a waiver of a penalty or an interest. We weren't asking them to waive something. We are asking them to return something they were never entitled to keep or to have in the first place, which falls squarely within the provisions of 31.11 of the Texas Tax Code. We are seeking a refund of something that they were never entitled to have in the first place. And to hold that just because the statute in 31.11 does not have clear language allowing us for judicial review would hold it meaningless. Thank you, Your Honors.
Or unconstitutional as well as due process? Are you arguing
that? Yes, ma'am.
Was that argued to the trial court? That it was unconstitutional?
Don't believe that was argued before the trial court. I don't think that we got to that argument. Thank you, Your Honors.
Just briefly, I have a couple of comments. As to the last question, no, that was not raised at the trial court. The unconstitutionality of 3111 in the event it does not provide for judicial review. In fact, in our reply brief, we raised that issue, and we don't believe it's proper for that to be raised for the first time today on appeal.
Mr. Sheriff.
Yes.
What authority is there for a taxing entity to accept a double payment and send to keep it?
Well, there is no authority. There is another section of the tax code that says, just that event, if you have, let's say, duplicate payments by different people, maybe the property's been sold, there's a specific section of the tax code that says no. In that situation, they are obligated to return whoever, I guess, paid it last. I'm sorry?
Suppose they don't. What's the enforcement provision?
Well, I believe the enforcement provision, in that situation, you have a statute that has imposes a very clear duty to return that money. And in that situation, you can file suit alleging a violation of law or the tax assessor collector is acting outside the scope of their authority, which very clearly in that case they would be. And so that type of suit would not be barred. So I believe they could do that. Finally, talking about the purposes of the statute, if you have money that's been paid into the taxing jurisdictions, and now that tax collector is dispersing that money, what purpose does the statute serve? Well, I think you better, if you're going to be doing that as a tax assessor collector, you better have the authority to do that. If you don't, some may make the argument that you're violating Article 3, Section 52 of the Constitution that says you're giving a gift to someone. I don't know that that's why specifically this was passed, but I think that is an answer to it. You need to have the authority if you're going to be giving money back. I'm not familiar with that case, but just from the other cases that we've gone through, I'm not familiar with any other that's found an implied waiver of immunity. That seems to go against the way the authority says it can't be implied. It's got to be explicit in the statute. That'd be the only way I could distinguish that.
Mr. Chair, is there any place in the tax code that you've not cited in your brief or that you're just familiar with that gives authority to the state to take funds twice in payment of a one-time valid obligation?
I'm
talking now about a circumstance, like you said, where there was double payment from two different taxpayers because of a change in ownership or something like
right.
that. We're just talking about one owner, same owner, two payments. Is there any authority anywhere for the state through the property tax collection process to collect twice on 1 year's taxes?
No, I believe they have the authority to assess taxes one time and one time only. I know of no authority to where they would be able to keep that. And I think that's what this statute could address. If you have paid taxes in that manner.
Why didn't they give them a refund?
Well, because the assessor-collector, when these payments were made, that's part of his duty is to look at this and be sure that if they send in, let's give an example of $100, and they pay $100, they take a look at that. And in the assessor-collector's view, they paid what was showing on the tax rolls at that time. In the assessor-collector's view, this was a correct and improper payment.
Well, let me ask the question a different way. Is there
okay.
any dispute that in fact the same taxes were paid twice?
I do not believe that was the dispute. Not the same taxes, but I guess questions as to the exact amount. But not
there were some differences about an amount because of a corrected tax roll, correct?
There was a corrected tax roll,
yes.
So
when the tax roll was corrected and then two payments made, that was for the same year for the same property with the same tax rates but with different values, then the second payment was accepted, and that's what we're not, we're disputing over the $17,000 that should have been returned.
That wasn't, that's not my understanding of the dispute, that not that it's the same payments, that, back to my example, if the tax office said there was $100 due, C.H. Townhome says, no, there's 90 due. Not that they paid the $100 twice or the 90 twice. That's my understanding of the dispute as to the amounts. Not that it was a double payment, but that they had paid more than they thought they should have.
Right.
I don't know if that, does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Your case is submitted. We appreciate your argument. Appreciate your being here today. Your briefs and your argument have been very helpful and actually very interesting. So thank you. You're excused to go about your business, and this court will be adjourned.